Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. And the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. When you can't make it to the track, make it to the Clubhouse Racebook.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Another Saturday at Saratoga. That means some great stakes action. A lot of fun up here as well. Let me first hit on some of the Capital OTB promos that are coming up. Don't forget, it's a fan appreciation day at the Partners Pub up in the Johnstown, Gloversville area. Swing by there today for food, vouchers, contest. A lot of fun. Fan appreciation day. Partners Pub branch. Play the board contest down at the Clubhouse Racebook as well, so keep that in mind also. All right. And I do want to remind you here at the track, talked about this earlier, really one of the most important racing charities, Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund Awareness Day here at the track. That means from 11:30 to 12:30 today, jockey autograph section out by the Silks Room. You can also pick up jockey trading cards. That is located starting at 11 o'clock. That's going to be located out by the Taste of New York Pavilion. That's kind of in the back on the far end of the grandstand. So pick up some trading cards and get them signed by some of the jocks. And then tomorrow night, jockey karaoke across the street of Vapors, and that also benefits the PDJF. It's also a lot of fun there. Some of the jockeys, very good. Some of the jockeys, maybe not so much so. All right, coming up a little bit later on, we will be joined by Tom Morley, who's off to a very nice start at the meet. Couple of wins yesterday. He had a stakes win earlier at the meet. We'll talk to Tom about that and more. David Aragona will also join us, morning line odds maker for NYRA, DRF time form also. We'll get some of his ideas for this afternoon. But we'll also talk a little bit about this afternoon, but also going back to last week, because he was down on the Jersey Shore covering the Haskell. It's our friend Bob Ehalt from the Blood Horse. Bob, good morning.
Morning, Seth. Pleasure to be with you.
I should say Blood Horse and Beyond, because your stuff also shows up in America's Best Racing.
Few other places.
And before I get to that, I would assume you agree, Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, really one of the more important charities.
Yeah, I think it's something everybody can get behind and support. It's really an invaluable life-saving venture for people. And certainly, you have to have utmost respect for the jockeys, for the risk they take and the job they do. You might get mad at a certain ride, but boy, you got to give them credit for what they really endure.
Yeah, we've seen a couple of incidents that were a little scary here and there. Turned out okay already at the meet, but that just emphasizes that. And again, you can go over and get the jockey signature, so get a piece of memorabilia and have some fun this afternoon over there, this morning into this afternoon. Again, 11:30 to 12:30, Jockey Silks Room. All right, Bob, let's before we get to today up at Saratoga, let's go back, because you were down at Monmouth. And I know you traveled down to Monmouth for big races fairly often for the Blood Horse on a yearly basis, and I've never been to Monmouth. Talk a little bit about the track, because Jersey Shore, I that's on my list. I want to get out to Del Mar at some point, want to get down at Monmouth, but just talk about it in a big day like this where they had a nice crowd too.
Yeah, it really, I enjoy going to Monmouth. It's a nice summer track, very laid back, a lot of people in a picnic area and shorts, coolers, things like that. It's really a really fun track to go to. I think it gets a good quality of racing, and I like the things they do there. I wish more people in the industry would be like Dennis Drazen, who runs Monmouth. He takes a chance. He's doing this fixed odds. And
you tried?
Oh, it's great. I mean, I got good value on one horse. I got like 5-1, more than 5-1 extra on a horse, because I bet him in the morning when I got there, and he got bet down from like the 15-1 price to about 9-1 and such. And it's really I think it's a fun thing. And I hear a lot of people, we like it, but they don't do anything to bring it in. Drazen does it. I give Dennis tremendous credit. He tried exchange wagering, the $1 million day in purses. He does whatever he can to try to get racing going, and I really think that's the kind of attitude you need in the sport. I think it would be, I was talking with someone the other day about it and saying, well, they're saying, well, they're not getting much betting on fixed odds in Jersey. But it's like, well, it's restricted to people at the track, and you have to live in New Jersey to bet. I mean, imagine how much money people would bet here if you could lock in a price, especially here at Saratoga on a two-year-old, first-time starter. Yeah. I mean, look, it's today. How many, what horses would you like to get that morning line price on because you know it's going to drop?
Yeah.
And I'd love to see the industry try it. If it doesn't work, oh, well.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to fail.
I'm right with you. The industry tends to be, in the time I have been a fan, which is a long time now, slow moving, slow to take up new ideas. And I often applaud things like are happening at Monmouth and being a little bit forward thinking. I know years ago I was at Laurel, and Frank Stronach had tried the room with the slot machines that were kind of based on race results. And when I walked in, I thought this is kind of a crazy idea, but I applauded him for at least giving it a shot. And that one didn't go anywhere, but they were trying to say, you know, let's see if we can get the people who want to pull the handle into the horse racing game. So at least they were giving it a shot.
Yeah, and I tell you what, one of the things, you know, with the fixed odds, Mama struck a great deal with betmakers to put the thing together. And what betmakers did is they built them this beautiful state-of-the-art tote, you know, visual, you know, 3D tote board that it looks like what you might see at Yankee Stadium or something. And I will say, puts to shame what we would see here, where if I'm sitting in the press box, I need my binoculars to read the odds on the horse. So they really have a great tote board to watch and watch the races, see the odds, because it has live odds. It has the tote odds. It has the fixed odds. But I say, by partnering with someone and doing this, they got that for free.
Yeah,
so.
Nice.
I really would love to see it come to New York.
Yeah, like I said, I have to get down to Monmouth, one of the tries that's on the list. But last week, the big day with the Haskell, and again, you were down there covering it, so I wanted you to give some opinions, particularly because I came into the summer season, really as the Triple Crown was playing out, I said this three-year-old crop is just totally up in the air. It has been emphasized, but coming into the summer, I said, well, things may sort out. You know, Haskell, Jim Dandy, Travers, Pennsylvania Derby. Not so much so after last week. We'll watch the stretch run, and it will be number one, Go Rocket Ride. Mike Smith and Richard Mandela, only the fourth start of the career. And clearly he had shown some talent with a win in debut, a win in the affirmed out there at Santa Anita. So he throws his hat in the ring, but in a way that, again, just keeps this three-year-old crop up in the air. Give us your thoughts on the Haskell.
Well, I think we learned one thing in 23 years when Richard Mandela, at the age of 95, decides to come back to Monmouth once again on his 23rd anniversary of running. You better bet his horse. He certainly had a horse who was ready to run. He certainly looked extremely good in the race. Now, Richard was not big on coming to the Travers. It doesn't look like he will. So that kind of makes you wonder now, where is he going to fit in? Does he go to the Pennsylvania Derby, the Pacific Classic, wherever? You know he's in good hands. He's going to be, I think he's going to be a good three-year-old, probably a good four-year-old. But when you look at it in terms of, like, say, for us up here at Saratoga, what you probably wanted to see was what the performance he got from Mage. The connections were very open and honest. They said before the race that the horse was 85%, and he ran like a horse who was 85%. Didn't run good enough to win, ran good enough to finish second, should benefit from that race, and I think he's going to be a top contender in the Travers. So while you could add to the confusion with the Haskell of the three-year-old picture, I think you certainly saw a performance that you want to take note of when Travers comes around.
Yeah, and again, we'll keep our fingers crossed this afternoon. Travers and Pennsylvania Derby help sort things out. Otherwise, and it may just come down to that when these horses start to face older in the fall, and a good placing in the Breeders' Cup Classic may elevate one of these. They're up in the air, but that kind of makes things a little more fun, a little more interesting, and we'll see how it all plays out. And I noted, you know, you mentioned Mays off the second place finish, and looking at what you had in the Blood Horse recently, nice little article on the connections, Mage being kind of a life-changing horse for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a great story. They're good people. I think they've really done a great job of trying to be good ambassadors to the sport, really been very open. And like I say, a lot of times you get trainers speak with horses and stuff of what's your intentions. Well, they were very honest to me. They, you know, talking about 85% ready, and you know, I I think that's really good for the sport. And, you know, it, as I say, it's a fun story, and hopefully it keeps going.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, too. I like the fact that being upfront, being transparent. Hey, we're taking a shot here and trying to get some fitness maybe for the big one, because I think that's fair to the bettors as well. All right, let's take a look at this afternoon. A couple of nice stakes here at Saratoga. And you're in town to cover the stakes action, obviously, for, again, Blood Horse. And folks can find your work also over in America's Best Racing. Vanderbilt, grade one event, $350,000, six furlongs of the trip. I pulled up a replay from the True North. We're going to watch number four, Elite Power, get it done. A little bit later with David Aragona, we will show the Aristides with Gunite. So I have replays of both of these. I'm tilting towards Gunite. I thought the return from the Middle East was very good, but Elite Power underneath. If folks are looking for an alternative, I thought Dean Delivers, Gunite were a little bit interesting. But what did you see in the Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page as you. I do like Elite Power. I think you got to beat him in my mind, and that hasn't been done in quite a while. Gunite did have a chance to beat him overseas, when they were over in Saudi Arabia. Didn't do it. He's getting 2 pounds in the weight. I don't think that's enough. I think Elite Power is definitely the horse to beat in the race. I kind of was looking, if I'm looking for an outsider, horse you mentioned, Dean Delivers. I don't think there's a heck of a lot of speed, and I think he has a bit of class to hang on. And if you get one of these situations where Gunite and Elite Power just like focus on each other, I think a horse like Dean Delivers could get away with a kind of comfortable pace. It might be a little tough to run down. Not sure if he could beat these two, but wouldn't be surprised if he splits them somehow and could get into the exacta. But this is going to be a real, real good race between Elite Power and Gunite. And though I've got to stay with the guy who is, the division leader in the sprinters category with Elite Power.
Little Vic, I liked him earlier this year, a little bit of a price when he won the Tom Fool with that 102 buyer. That would play in here, but the last two races, not as good. But as I say, Gunite is also interesting to me with Linda Rice training. Now, Synthesis, there's a race three back that's good enough. So it's a fun field, but I think it is going to come down to, and my fingers are crossed, it comes down to turning the stretch, the top two square off. Mm. All right, let's go a little bit later on the card. The aforementioned three-year-olds in the Jim Dandy. We'll see if this can help sort things out a little bit. Field of five, but a very intriguing field of five. I pulled up the Belmont. Archangelo, the number three, will win. Forte, though, off the long layoff, trying the mile and a half. I think everybody said this was a pretty good effort for Forte. Number six running second. A little bit later with David Aragona, we'll watch the Arkansas Derby. I like Angel of Empire in here. I liked Angel of Empire in the Arkansas Derby. The last two disappointed me a little bit. I'm not going to go away, but Forte probably the one to beat. And Saudi Crown becomes the X factor in here. What are your thoughts on the Jim Dandy?
Well, look, I think the way this year has gone for three-year-olds, anybody could win this race, yeah. And you would not be surprised. You could certainly make a case. Now, to go over them kind of looking in different orders, for one, I think basic handicapping 101 is going to tell you Saudi Crown is the lone speed. He's going to get out there. He's got sharp early speed for a sprinter, and they're just not going to catch him. The rest of the horses are prepping for the Travers, and, he's the play in the race. Now, we've gone to the races enough to know the wise guys aren't always right. And a key factor to me with Saudi Crown is that on Tuesday at about noontime, I was talking with Brad Cox. He did not mention this horse was running. If anything, he was lamenting that there was no speed in the race. All of a sudden on Wednesday, the horse comes in. So you sort of figure this horse was put in because of an opportunity that they went for. He hasn't probably been pointed to this race, hasn't been trained. He's now going to try to go two turns for the first time, mile and an eighth, against horses who are seasoned, mile and an eighth horses who competed, good enough to compete and be factors in Triple Crown races. I'm not so keen on him, especially that he's probably going to be very heavily bet. Now, where does that take you? Well, the obvious one is Forte. I think Forte is going to run a big race. I think he really has had some setbacks with the scratch in the Derby, being on the vets list, having all the time off. I think this is going to be a big effort by him. Not sure if he's going to win. I'd like to have seen a little more speed in the workouts. They are putting the blinkers on. Maybe that'll get some more speed to help him in this race. But I think he's going to put in a big performance. But again, given the odds, I might look at somewhere else. I was with you in the Derby. I liked Angel of Empire in the Derby. He has won in a mile and an eighth. But I'm not sure if this pace figure, this pace scenario is going to help him. I'm not sure. That leaves me with the two horses who are like the outsiders in the odds, Disarm and Hit Show. And to me, that's kind of a coin flip. Disarm had a big race over this track last year. Good effort in the Kentucky Derby. Might have been a little closer, but he got shut off in the stretch. Pointed for this race. I think he's going to turn in a good effort. I might give the little bit of the nod to Hit Show. I like the jockey switch to get Luis Saez in the saddle. I think really a mile and an eighth is his distance. I think he might be able to work out a good trip sitting just off his stablemate in Saudi Crown. And, you know, I kind of leaning a little bit toward him, basically because of the price. I think, as I say, anyone who wins this race, I would not be surprised. And I probably would take a look post time to take a look at Disarm and Hit Show are both 6-1 in the morning line. Why are they going to be on the odds on the board? If there's a big discrepancy, I might be tilted to go for the price.
And I think you kind of nailed it looking at what would be considered the two outsiders, because I think it's a five-horse field, but I don't think you'd be shocked if any of them won.
No, I mean,
I think they all have stuff on the resume that you can point to.
You know, you're looking at figures on the race. They're very, very similar. The pace factor definitely shapes the race. You don't know who's going to – you know who's going to be in front unless something happens at the break. But who's going to be chasing? Do the blinkers make Forte chase? And how does he respond? And talking to Mike Rapoli about it, I asked him about, you know, with the blinkers, and they said, well, they want to get him a little sharper. And he did say, well, it's 50-50. He'll wear them in the Traverse. So I think they're experimenting a little bit just to see how this does respond. And look, for a horse like Forte, this is an important race. You know, you're looking at a purse value of $500,000. For a horse like Forte, the race is the Traverse, and it doesn't have anything. It's not even so much the $1.25 million purse. When you're talking a horse with a breeding like Forte as a stallion, the kickers in this game, probably a race like the Traverse, if he wins that race, that's going to get him like $6 million to the connection. That will enhance his value to the breeders by an amount like that.
Yeah.
And then if he wins the three-year-old title, you get a little more. The prize, again, to them is the Traverse. Now, that doesn't mean he's not good enough to win this race. He is. But, as I say, putting on the blinkers here, I could see it being a little bit of an experiment. Rather than experimenting in the big showdown that will probably decide the title. So we'll see. But, you know, I think it's for a five-horse field, I think it's a very interesting betting race.
I totally agree. And just before I let you go, Bob, looking at the human side of things here, I have the current standings. Linda Rice leading 14-11. Irad Ortiz leading Luis Saez 22-14, and I bring both of those names up because you're down at Belmont Aqueduct for much of the rest of the year covering for the Blood Horse, and I thought the trainer's side and certainly the jockey side at the recent Belmont meet were a lot of fun. A, Linda Rice won the title, the fourth straight title, and continues to go hot, but that battle between the Ortiz brothers the last couple of days down at Belmont was crazy.
Especially going down to the last race where the brother could have tied him in the last race. But, you know, look, Linda Rice, it's kind of amazing. I mean, you know, they talked to Linda at the end of Belmont, and she was kind of downplaying, oh, I can't compete with Chad and Todd there. And now she's got a big lead on him. I mean, look, I give her credit. She did something that you're eligible to do through the rules, go down to Kentucky with a big bankroll of money, bring horses from there who are pretty good horses running for extreme amounts of money, and bring them up here, and she's been successful with that. So that's a game anybody can play. I mean, now I wouldn't be surprised if Kentucky changes the rules because the horsemen down there are pretty upset about people taking their horses and shipping them up north. But I give her credit for that. And you know, it's just remarkable that, you know, as I say, we're here into the third week, and she's got the lead on Chad and Todd. And, boy, she's got a ton of horses today, too. So it doesn't look like she's going to be cheap speed in this race. I think those guys are going to have to really do some work.
It's going to be interesting as we get into week three and week four. Are things going to even out or not? Because she's going gangbusters.
Well, you see, one of the horses she's running back today won on opening day. So like with Chad and Todd, their horses are probably going to start once at the meet.
Yeah.
She may get 2-3 starts out of some of these horses. So even if she doesn't have the numbers of horses eligible for spots, she's probably going to be running. She's going to run those horses that have won, those ones that she's won. They're going to come back and run. So
it should be fun. Up here, the human side is always fun. But Irod certainly, with he is just
he seems pretty intent on taking that title. So,
Bob, always appreciate the visit. Again, tell people to follow you with Blood Horse, America's Best Racing. As well, and enjoy the rest of the meet up here. I know you'll be back and forth a little bit, but maybe we'll plug you in. Still plenty of meat left, so maybe we'll plug you in again before the meet ends. But thanks for stopping by this morning.
Pleasure to be here, Seth. Always great to be with you.
All right, we'll take a break. He's in the house. Tom Morley's talking about a good start to the meet. Couple of wins yesterday. Stakes win earlier in the meet. We'll talk about that and more. Stay tuned.
Turn your love of racing into savings with equine discounts through the NTRA. Purchase through equine discounts and receive great savings on well-known brands like John Deere, Sherwin-Williams, Big Ass Fans, Farmers Insurance, and Office Depot. Join thousands of other equine members and support companies that give back to the sport we all love. Call 866-678-4289 or visit equinediscounts.com to start saving today.
Sometimes it pays to go with the flow, to check your worries at the door, to reconnect with your crew, to follow the thrills and the flavor, to roll with it and see where it takes you, to enjoy every minute to its fullest, and to dance like there's no tomorrow. You can do that here at Rivers Casino and Resort Schenectady, where the good times flow.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, happy to be joined now by Tom Morley, who is off to a very nice start at the meet. I went down to the winner's circle yesterday after win number two on the day and said, come on back and sit in with us. A stakes win earlier in the meet. We'll talk about all of that and more. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back on.
You happy with the kickoff? You got to be.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. You know, it's always, when you come up here, you know that, first of all, the eyes of the racing world are on you. And secondly, you don't want to get off to a slow start up here because it can really drag. So I'm thrilled with the start we've had. Yeah,
you have to be. We'll hit on some of that. Talk about the stakes win and the two wins yesterday and whatnot, and what's you have planned for the rest of the meet. But always when we get up here, we've talked about it when we've had you before, but I always think we get new fans that are drawn in and watch year in and year out. So when we bring trainers back here, they see your name in the program, and I always like to introduce a little bit. So give us your background a little bit. Obviously, with the accent, we know you're from across the pond, as it were, in a racing family, right?
Yeah, a racing family from England. My uncle was a trainer. A cousin, Henry Daly, trains at the moment there. And, you know, my father owned and bred horses with my another uncle, Christopher Spencer. Yeah, it's, you know, I'm one of five boys, but I'm the only one that's involved in the racing industry.
Oh, really?
And Dad did say, he said it was a shot to nothing that one of you would end up doing it. So I came here 13 years ago now, and came for 18 months work experience with Eddie Keneally, and I never went home. I'm now married with two beautiful daughters, and you all know who my wife is, Maggie Wolfendale. So, you know, we're part of New York Racing now.
I should have picked up from Twitter. I should have picked up because your two daughters, very cute. Names?
Grace and Willa.
Grace, yeah, and again, very cute. And Maggie, of course, does a great job on the front side as well. How'd you two meet?
Just here, funnily enough. We met during Saratoga, and it took a while for me to persuade her to go out for dinner with me. It took all the way to Halloween, so She fought her corner valiantly, but thank God she finally gave in.
Very good. And again, from England, and you were back this year, right? Had a start at Royal Ascot?
Yes. Yeah, it was very exciting. We took a two-year-old filly over for the Queen Mary. Unfortunately, got a ton of rain on the Monday, and that really literally dampened our chances. But she performed creditably, finished ninth, and it was great to have an opportunity and a horse good enough to go over there and be competitive. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to getting to stretch her out up here towards the end of the meet in the PG Johnson.
Oh, so we'll see, oh, very good. So we'll see her. Good. But that had to just be a thrill for you, you know, being from over there to have a starter at Royal Ascot.
Yeah, it was huge for me personally, and it was huge for her ownership group. You know, those opportunities don't come around very often. So a lot made a lot of people, you know, a trip of their racing lifetime.
Yeah, very good. I also wanted to talk about your background because you were a Flying Start graduate. And just a couple of days ago, I had a current Flying Start guy in, Alex Sauceville, who was a high school champ basketball player down at Scotia, a local guy, and he's the only U.S. representative this year. So we talked a little bit about his experience in Flying Start, which, again, a great program. Talk a little bit about your experience with the Flying Start.
Yeah, I mean, I always say that I owe Sheikh Mohammed a huge amount of you know, it's a massive leg up. It's 10 years of experience in two, and the exposure to leaders within the industry across the globe, from Ireland and England to America, Australia, Dubai. You know, you just don't get that opportunity unless you're fortunate enough to be chosen to do the program. So it exposes you to every aspect of the industry, from racecourse management to broodmares and foals to the racetrack itself to corporate entertainment and hospitality and business modules. You know, it's a tremendous program.
How many countries did you visit?
Six, yeah.
Yeah, very good. And again, if there are young folks out there thinking about the industry, put that kind of thing in your back pocket, because certainly, as you say, it is a massive head start. And Alex, lucky enough to be. And was the, and when you were doing it, was there that application program that was extensive to get in?
Yeah. They do a thorough process of choosing the 12 people. Yeah,
very good. All right, let's talk a little bit about what you've done so far. And I went back and pulled up the stakes win from the second day of the meet. It's the Coronation Cup. It was switched over to the dirt. We're going to watch Unified Alliance, the number 7, get it done with the surface switch. What were your thoughts coming into the day, the surface switch, and then the thoughts on the performance itself?
She's a lovely filly. She shipped into me. She was purchased privately by the Hickey brothers, Regan Jack Racing, and John Service sent her into me for a stake at Belmont, which we saddled her for, and I thought she performed creditably that day and finished second. But she's just done very, very well since we've had her. Really enjoyed working with this filly. She's got a ton of class. We worked on the turf at Belmont. Javier was extremely excited about the way she worked on the turf, so we wanted to give her a go on the turf.
Yeah.
There weren't any dirt stakes for three-year-old fillies available at the time, so we thought we'd roll the dice. And then obviously when it rained and came off, you know, she's already relatively accomplished on dirt. But she was running against a filly who'd beaten her before, and I just thought it was a lovely post position, and Javier had ridden her once before, and we felt that we had possibly the jump on the rest of the field. And so, you know, the aim was always to be aggressive from the gate and try and, you know, make them pass us, not the other way around.
You know, you've kind of alluded to it already, but you have to feel pretty good getting the meet off to a start, second day of the meet, putting a stakes race in the holster. Do you come in with goals?
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the time you don't reach them in Saratoga because, look, it's sensationally competitive up here. And you can have clever ideas with horses and drop horses in class, but you're not the only one doing it. And that's the thing. You know, the claiming races are unbelievably competitive. You can see that in the claim box, the number of people that want to claim these horses, because we're all trying to do the same thing. We all want to win up here. So to win a stake on the second day of the meet was a fantastic start. And she's a very, very nice filly, and she'll point towards the Galway. We'll have a look at the Galway and also the race at Charlestown going 7/8 for the 3-year-old.
Okay, so we might see her, but you might look out of town.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, very good. But again, nice performance, nice way to kick off the meet with a little stakes action. But yesterday was very good as well to put a couple in the holster. We'll kick things off. We'll look at race number two, optional claimer, non-winners of two other than Into the Sunrise. The number seven horse gets it done here by half a length. Nice gutsy performance. Manny Franco on board. Talk about the win yesterday in race number two.
Yeah, it's funny, Seth, when you pick up the PPs for a race, the only way that I imagined that we would struggle in this race was running against Artemis City Limits. And when he scratched,
yeah,
I thought that we had a really, really live shot of a horse who's been desperate to go 5.5 furlongs on firm turf. And he just hasn't got to do that recently. And we picked him up with a view that up here, these are the conditions that this horse should thrive in. And then we got an outside post position with the fastest horse in the race. Now, a lot of people couldn't see him being the speed, but he's been very, very sharp since we claimed him, this horse. And, you know, Manny and I agreed again in the paddock that we'd be aggressive from the word go. We thought we had the fastest horse and try and make them come and catch us. And I thought it was a fabulous ride from Manny. He was suitably aggressive from the word go, but just kept enough up his sleeve to hold off Fauci, who's a very accomplished individual.
First off, the claim, so a very clever claim. And you talked about the claim box up here. Yeah, being up in the press box, they'll announce the shake. I mean, there are 20-way shakes. If you're playing the claiming game up here, that's as tough to win as on the racetrack.
Yeah, and it is difficult because, I mean, for a barn like mine that has typically 35 to 40 horses, we've already lost five horses in the claim box at the meet, and we've replaced one of them. So, it's, you know, if you want to win up here, you have to be aggressive, but you have to realize you're not going to bring your horses home, and you have to be okay with that.
Yeah. So how many horses do you have up here now?
We bring 15 up at a time, and I have...
And then are you going back and forth?
And rotate through Belmont, yeah. Okay, so we've got about 25, 30 at Belmont at the moment.
I'm going to let you pronounce, because I had like three different pronunciations.
Colloquy.
Okay. That was one of them. Yeah. That was one of my pronunciations. But that was the fifth race yesterday. I like that one on top. And I think first win in the meet for Apprentice Jamie Torres as well, I believe.
Yeah.
So that added a little bit of extra as well.
You know, he's such a hardworking young man, and he's incredibly humble, and he rides unbelievably well. I mean, he is as big a best-kept secret that we've got around here as far as I'm concerned. I haven't seen a bug boy as impressive as him since Jose Gomez. And honestly, I think he has all the attributes to become an absolutely fantastic journeyman jockey as soon as he loses his bug. We supported him as much as we possibly could. We gave him his first stakes win on locally owned at Aqueduct, which got us both in trouble with the stewards, because he said to me in the paddock, he said, "I love your hat." And I said, "Well, I tell you what, if you win this, then you can have my hat." And so when he won, he took his helmet off, took my hat off my head, rode into the winner's circle wearing a trilby. The stewards called me, they fined him, we all got into all sorts of trouble. So yesterday...
Oh, I should have pulled up the picture.
So yesterday he put my Panama on his head in the winner's circle, but he didn't dare take his helmet off.
Oh, that's funny.
And I'm thrilled for him. You know, he's ridden very well at the meet so far without getting a win, so I was absolutely thrilled that he gets on very well with this horse. He's done nothing wrong on him so far, and he was super confident yesterday. He walked into the paddock, and actually he said to me, he said, "When we win, can we do the hat thing again?" And I said, "Heine, it's Saratoga. Dab the brakes on when. It's let's hope we win, okay? But if we're lucky enough to win, yes, we can do the hat thing again. But you don't get to keep this one." He kept the one at Aqueduct.
And they just put up the picture, because I caught a little of you before I asked you to be on the show of you were watching the big screen in the clubhouse after watching the replay, and there's the hat. So you got the hat back. But, yeah, I should have taken the picture, because he put it over that, and I didn't know the backstory. Oh, that's very funny. Very good. But
I'm running out of hats to give him.
that's hilarious. And just going to pull up one more, just a memory, because, again, when I have guests in, I pop down and check out Twitter feeds and whatnot. And fairly recently on the Twitter feed, you and your wife were kind of remembering one of your big horses up here going back a few years. Have You Gone Away? She wins the Honorable Miss and gives you a stakes win up here at Saratoga, but it was a grade two. So I thought, why don't we pull up the next race, the grade one, Ballerina. This is going back a few years. Have You Gone Away? Just remember her and what that meant to you in the career, the nice couple of graded stakes wins up here at Saratoga with her a few years back.
It still chokes me out watching this. She was such a special mare to us. She wasn't in our barn for a long time, but again, she just seemed to absolutely thrive in our shed row, and gave us our first graded stakes win in Saratoga. It was our first graded stakes win, full stop. She was my first stakes winner when she won the Dancing Renee. And then to win the win on Travers Day, a race as prestigious as the Ballerina, was very, very special. And Maggie was quite pregnant at the time with Grace. And it was just, you know, she was just a very, very... She took us on a wild, wild nine-month ride, that mare. She was a wonderful, wonderful horse to be around.
And there another picture I pulled out of Twitter where you can see the admiration in your eye.
Yeah, there's a few pictures of me and her. There's another one after she won the Ballerina, and it was the fifth race of the day on Travers Day, and I ended up going back to... Because the owners weren't here, and I ended up going back to the stall and literally sitting in her stall for about half an hour just looking at her and admiring her, because she was a fantastic specimen as well. She was a big, robust liver chestnut, deep, dark coat. She was a wonderful, just a wonderful horse to be around.
Yeah, and again, that's just a fun story to remember. You remember your all-time first victory?
Treble Maker.
Yeah, everybody.
April 13th, 2013. 6.5 furlongs, maiden 25 at Aqueduct, ridden by Junior Alvarado. I'll never forget it.
Every trainer I have in can remember that, that first victory. Very good. Tom, appreciate the visit again. I said earlier, went in the winner's circle after you had the two yesterday. And you're off to such a good start. Wanted to plug in, talk a little bit about it. Wish you good luck the remainder of the meet. Any horses we should watch for? You have any two-year-olds maybe? Though?
I'm really looking forward to seeing Kinane stretch out. She's got a proper stayer's pedigree. You know, there's a lot of two-turn turf influence in her whole page. And so she's going to run in the P.G. Johnson at the end of August. And obviously Granny's Connection is a very, very exciting, very fast New York bred. She's 4 for 6 for us. She got beat on the line by in a nostril in the Dancing Renee. And she'll run in the Union Avenue on the 11th of August as well. So I'm looking forward to those two especially.
All right. We'll watch for those. And again, wish you a lot of good luck. Congratulations so far. We'll talk again.
Thank you, Seth.
All right. Tom Morley. We'll take a break. When we come back, David Aragon is in the house. Morning Line odds maker for NYRA. Daily Racing Form, Time Form, much, much more. We'll get some of his ideas on this afternoon's card. Stay tuned.
Just watch the races when you can be in the middle of the action. For nearly 20 years, Bonaventure Stables' share-based ownership program has made thoroughbred ownership affordable for the everyday fan. Ownerships of 5 and 10% are now available on a nice selection of horses. As a partial owner with Bonaventure Stables, you'll enjoy all the benefits afforded every owner. Visit with your horse in the private stable area. Greet the trainers and jockeys in the paddock. And when your horse wins, savor the moment in the winner's circle at Saratoga, Belmont, Aqueduct, or wherever you bring home the prize. Based in historic Saratoga Springs, Bonaventure Stables has been training winners and creating memories since 2005. Learn more, see available horses, and meet our team at bonaventurestables.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Happy to be joined now by our friend David Aragona. Again, he's the Morning Line odds maker here for the New York Racing Association, but also Daily Racing Form, Time Form, and much, much more. We'll get a little update on that, but some ideas for today, and we'll hit on Morning Line odds making subjects as well. All of that coming up with David Aragona. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Great to join you and be in Saratoga.
It always is fun to be in Saratoga, yes. Right? And part of the fun of it is you get to see a lot of people you don't necessarily see the rest of the year.
Definitely.
The social aspect is a big part of Saratoga, for better or worse.
Yeah, the racetracks can feel a little empty sometimes at Belmont and Aqueduct, not the case up here.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a lot of fun. Before we get into this afternoon, let's talk a little bit about, first of all, I'll let you tout a little bit because I know Daily Racing Form and Time Form, you guys do some weekly videos and whatnot. Tell that if people want to find those.
Yeah, I do two podcasts per week with my colleague Craig Mulkowski, who makes the Time Form U.S. Speed Figures. We just look at things from the speed figures perspective. We do some handicapping of weekend races. We did a preview of this Pick 5 sequence at Saratoga on Saturday. And then I also do some videos on Daily Racing Form's YouTube channel with Mike Beard, Dan Ailman, Craig. So you can find all that on DRF, any of their channels, and DRF.com.
I got to get Craig in here. So, do you know, is he coming to town at all?
He's not going to make it up this year. Right. He was hoping. He tries to make it up sometimes Whitney Week, but not this year.
I got to get him plugged in at some point. I remember him from years back in one or two of the old racing forums I was in that became extinct when Twitter appeared. But it was always fun. You could see he was headed on to bigger and better things, certainly.
Yeah, Craig's the best.
Yeah. And speaking of bigger and better things, you, the morning line odds maker for NYRA. And you have to feel good because I said earlier, it seems like universally people on social media, which can be brutal, but they tout you as, if not the best, one of the best morning line odds maker in the country. And you have to take some pride in the response that people give to you.
No, I mean, it's nice to hear. I always say the best compliment for me is when I hear nothing, because when people are not thinking about the morning line, that typically means the morning line is good. You don't want it to be a discussion point. But no, I try to put a lot of work into it, especially with those two-year-old races, watching a lot of videos and doing some research into the pedigrees. So try to get it as accurate as possible.
Talk about that. What is the work that goes into it? The card comes out, you get the card, and so what is your homework before you put the numbers on the page?
Yeah, I mean, well, NYRA is one of those tracks that doesn't draw too far in advance. Yeah. So a lot of times it's like a 16-hour turnaround, especially for like these Saturday cards. But I just get the PPs, try to spend the most time on those two-year-old races. I look up the workout videos, pedigrees, try to see who's working with who. XBTV is a great resource for that I try to use a lot. But for the other races, you know, it's just trying to like think about it from the perspective of how the public handicaps, jockeys that take money, paying attention to hot trainers, that sort of thing, and just kind of synthesizing all of these factors to see how people are going to approach these races.
And you know, people talk about it all the time, certainly Andy and the folks on the NYRA pregame show. You have to factor in a point or two these days for Irad Ortiz
and Linda Rice these days. Especially at this meet. The way things have been going, it just seems like those horses are really taking an extra amount of money than what they usually do.
Yeah, no question about it. And I'll also ask you, I've asked a bunch of people over the past year or so when I have them in who are in this side of the game. From when I first got into the game to now, it seems like when the betting public gets on a favorite, when they start betting a favorite, man, they go crazy. I sit in and do the afternoon handicapping show down in the studio at Albany, and we look at a bunch of different tracks, and I'm amazed. Regardless of the track, there can be a smaller track with a $5,000 conditional claiming race, and a horse will be 2-5. And my thought is, a $5,000 claimer, 2-5, but it seems like the betting public, when they jump on, and that seems to be reflected a lot in your morning line, that your morning lines can offer shorter prices than when you go back 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I try to do that, so the track doesn't seem to have a problem with it. I know some tracks like to keep the morning lines within a, you know, smaller spectrum, but if a horse is going to be 2-5, and I think it is, I make it 2-5 on the morning line. I feel like that's my job. But as far as horses being really short prices, it just feels like the money is so smart and sophisticated these days, and especially at a meet like Saratoga, there's so much good information out there and so many people have it that the money is often pretty accurate.
Yeah, there's no question about it. It is certainly, they like to jump on them, no question about it. All right, let's get some thoughts. Any thoughts on the meet so far? Certainly we've had some outstanding performances at this point so far.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there have been some short prices coming in. I guess that changed a little bit yesterday. There were some bigger prices that came in. But generally, it's been pretty good. It feels like this is the time of the meet when things start to really pick up and you get, like, the full slate of Kentucky shippers and the stakes start to come up a little more interesting. So looking forward to when things can turn into August.
Yeah, Saratoga being Saratoga, we've had some short fields, but certainly competitive fields and certainly names that you can stick in your back pocket and say, hey, I was there the day I saw that happen. But as you say, as we progress into August, things can become even more exciting. And today we have a couple of exciting stakes races. And again, they're not huge fields, but I think they're fun, competitive fields with some horses that, at least on the top end, will make it competitive. Let's start in the Vanderbilt. A little bit earlier, we watched Elite Power win the True North. But for this segment, I pulled up the Aristides. I like Gunnett this afternoon off of this race on the return from the Middle East. But the two that stand out are Elite Power and Gunnett, obviously. I'm tilting towards the Asmussen Runner, but I thought Dean Delivers and Gunnett were a little bit interesting if folks are shopping for an alternative. Your thought in the Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I also picked Gunnett at the number 5. A little difficult with Gunnett and Gunnett in the same race.
Yeah.
When you look at the speed figures, he looks very similar to Elite Power. The only difference is Elite Power has won all of his recent races, and Gunnett has just kind of come out on the short end in a few of those really tough spots. But I thought he put in some game efforts overseas in those two races in Saudi Arabia and at Maidan in Dubai. And then last time out, I mean, Bengo is such a Churchill specialist that he was able to beat that horse. So feels like he's coming into this race in good form. 6 furlongs, maybe a tad short for him, but you could say the same thing for Elite Power, too. So it's going to be a good matchup between these two.
Yeah, Bengo, the great Foley trainer, came back to win out of that, too. So that kind of flattered Gunite a little bit. And Steve Asmussen has just been so good with sprinters the last few years. I mean, Echo Zoodle the other day.
Oh, she was amazing.
Example of that. Yeah, just crazy. All right, the Jim Dandy also on the card. And before we get started, I'll just get your opinion overall of the three-year-olds this year. Been talking a lot about it here on the show, going back to the Triple Crown. Man, it is totally up in the air at this point.
It really is. It's one of those years where the Travers is going to decide a lot. Let's hope all these horses stay healthy and can make it to that race. And you want to see the top three-year-olds all converging in that Travers, because a lot of different horses have won the top races so far. Some have not shown up on the big days. A few have had layoffs that have complicated things, haven't been able to participate. So you hope that all the big names show up in the Travers and we get to settle it on the racetrack.
Well, and you say you hope they stay healthy. Two Phils was the one that,
felt like he might have been the best of the crop that
we will not see him as he's now been retired, but we'll see if things can shake out a little bit, perhaps, because certainly there are some horses in the Jim Dandy this afternoon that can be players in that three-year-old division. I'm pulling up the Arkansas Derby. I liked Angel of Empire in that race, got that race done, and then maybe for me at least a little bit disappointing in the Derby and the Belmont. I thought the Derby effort was okay. I was kind of thinking, you know, with the triple digit buyer, the third place, I leaned on him in the Belmont. That was a little more disappointing, the fourth place finish. But I'm not going to jump off. I'm going to go with him. Forte probably the one to beat. Saudi Crown the X Factor. Disarm for Asmussen off the win last time. Fun race. What did you see in the Jim Dandy?
Yeah, I like Angel of Empire, too. I'm hoping he can get back to this sort of performance that we saw in the Arkansas Derby, cutting back to the 9 furlongs. I mean, none of these horses really want to go a mile and a half, and he did not get the most comfortable trip in that Belmont Stakes. Tapit Trice made this premature move that day, and it kind of forced both Angel of Empire and Hit Show to maybe go a little bit earlier than they wanted to in that Belmont Stakes, and they just got a little tired at the end. I think cutting back to this distance, he's going to get a right kind of trip, just sitting behind the speeds in what's going to be a compact 5-horse field, and he's got that turn of foot that we saw in Arkansas that hopefully he can reproduce here. I mean, Forte's the horse to beat, but I always get a little leery when they make these blinker changes with a horse like this. It just feels like it's a little bit of a desperation move. He's been a little disengaged on the far turn of some of his recent races, and they're trying to, you know, put a Band-Aid on that, but I worry sometimes that it's going to have the negative effect.
Yeah, we saw that down. We were down covering the Florida Derby, so watching it live, I thought, man, he's done on the turn, and then that was a big effort to get it done there, and it was a similar situation in the Belmont.
Yeah.
So they're saying these are kind of small blinkers, but just to get them focused a little bit, we'll see if it works, but it's definitely an experiment.
It is, and he's going to be a short price, and trying something new at a short price can be tricky.
Yeah, the old Harvey Peck logic. Yes. I always like to refer to Harvey. A couple other ideas on the card today. We'll kick things off looking at race number 9, which I think is a fun race on the turf. I went 6, 10, 9, and 8. I went with Diamond Hands, Pletcher, one of the Ortiz brothers, Jose Ortiz, at 5-1, I thought was a player. Get Your Kicks being lightly raced, I think, is a little bit live in here. And then the 9 and the 10 at some prices also in my mix. So for me, 6, 10, 9, and 8. But I can see two or three others that I could point to and have equal confidence. Your thought in the 9th?
Yeah, I thought this was a really wide-open race, and I just generally wanted to veer away from some of the horses that have already had chances at this level, like Expand the Map and even Diamond Hands, who's kind of racking up the second-place finishes at this point. So I took a look at the number 3, Bolivie, who I think is going to be double digits in terms of the odds in this race, and Brendan Walsh off to a strong start at the meet. And I always think inside post positions are so important going this 1 mile distance on the inner turf. And I thought this horse was pretty game last time at Churchill, trying to rally between horses in traffic and switching back to the inside lane. It was a slower race, but the winner came back to run a much faster speed figure in her next start at Belmont Park. So just thought Bolivia was a little interesting, a horse that could get somewhat overlooked.
And Gaffleone a couple of days ago had a nice day, and so he's maybe moving in the right direction as well. All right, let's go to the finale. If folks are looking to get some dinner money on the walk out, the finale maiden specials on the grass at 1 3/8. I'm 7, 3, 6, and 9. I put She's Mo Bubbly on top for Todd Pletcher. Off the try last time, similar situation. The two underneath, improving numbers for Christophe Clement. I thought Fizzy for Pletcher could be a little bit intriguing. And Libretto's had plenty of opportunities, but off the last couple, I thought the Mike Maker runner was playable as well. But another one where I could point to two or three others. I have it 7, 3, 6, and 9. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I like Fizzy quite a bit in this race, the number 9 horse. Her debut at Belmont is one that it's worth going back to watch. And if anybody's a fan of gallopouts, she's a horse that you really want to pay attention to, because she was just in traffic for almost that entire race. And it looked like Irad just sort of gave up at the top of the stretch and just realized he wasn't going to be able to get there. But at about the 8th pole, he switched her to the outside and asked her for some run. And she really started moving across the wire. And you could sort of see, oh, maybe this horse didn't get so much out of this race. And he actually rode her out after the finish, past the winner and into the clubhouse turn, well ahead of the field, almost like he was trying to prep maybe for next time. Yeah. Switch to Flavian Pratt today. Wouldn't be surprised if this horse shows more speed from the outside. And just based on that prep first time out, I feel like the 1 3/8 might be the right distance for her.
Well, let me ask, because I'm not a big gallopout guy, but now I have to ask if you generally are, or was this maybe a situation where it was just a little bit of a different situation that made the gallopout stand out a little more?
I mean, I think sometimes people get too caught up in them. Like sometimes the winner just gets like taken in hand at the end of the race and gets like pulled up very quickly and everybody gallops out past the horse. I don't care so much about that, but this horse was intentionally asked to go to go past the wire, which you don't see that often, and it felt like maybe there was some intention there.
I like that analysis, because like I say, I'm not much of a gallop out guy, but that to me has maybe a little bit of a more special angle to it. And before I let you go, just give us a little background again. Whenever we get people in here, I always like to find out how'd you get into the game, and then how did you get tied in eventually with Naira and DRF and Timeform?
I got introduced to the game, like so many people, by my dad and his brother. My uncle actually was kind of nice. They were both up here this week with me, so got to spend some time with them. They got into racing because a friend took them to the races for the first time. It was 1973, June, and the first race they saw together was Secretariat win the Belmont Stakes. So that kind of got them hooked on the sport, and they've been coming up here for so many years. I started going with them as a kid and really grew a love for the game in Saratoga. And, fast forward to when I got older in my 20s, I started keeping a blog online that people started reading, writing about the Naira races. Some people took notice of it, and it just led, one thing led to another, and I ended up getting this job at Daily Racing Form, partnership with Naira, and now I do the morning line for them.
Yeah, very good. And again, I have to ask now, you said your father and your uncle were up here. I had texted my sisters 2 days ago and said, hey, tomorrow, here's my hunch play. They both said, put $10 on it because of their kids. Smart uncle. You had to play a little smart uncle yesterday?
No, I didn't get that one, make the connection. But, I think he was the one that got disqualified.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. No, my sisters were texting, what does this mean? What does this mean? And I'm like, it's not good. The across-the-board bet will still cash, but not as much as it would have. But, yeah, the hunch bet play yesterday, I thought maybe with the uncle you would have jumped on that. Because I'm sure there were plenty of people in the stands who were.
I would imagine so. Those names that a lot of people have a connection to.
That's a question, too. Do you consider that at all, if there's a Bob or a Mike in a name?
You see it every so often, like a Mary or a Mike. A lot of people have those names in their families. They'll take a little more money. I think there was a horse that ran around here named Cecilia Mike a few years ago. It seemed like he would always open at like 2-1 or 5-2, and the price would drift up, almost like he was owned by my racehorse. You see that similar phenomenon. But, yeah, you do have to factor those those other things that are not in the PPs into the boarding line sometimes.
The slightly esoteric side of the morning line. Always curious, because I have John White on quite a bit as well when we're down in the studio. John, of course, the morning line odds maker out of San Anita. At the end of every day, do you go back and kind of, is there a scorecard and where you're like, nailed it? That one.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, with the morning line, with the handicapping, I think it's always a good idea to sort of go back over the results at the end of the day and just say to yourself, did I miss something with this horse? Sometimes the answer is no, and there's a horse you never would have gotten to, and you just have to turn the page and stick to the methods that work for you. But I always think it's informative to sort of go back and say, like, what was the case for this horse, and can I incorporate that into my handicapping in the future?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I usually say it every year, and I don't think I've said it this year. For years up here at Saratoga, I'll walk out, and people are tossing the racing form or the program into the trash bin. And I always say, no. Go home and do exactly what you said. And here's a horse I didn't have that won and paid $19. Because now you have the luxury of reverse engineering.
Yeah.
Like, why did this horse win? And I think that helps your handicapping.
I think a lot of people don't like to think about it when you lose money on a race. You know, you just want to turn the page and not go back and revisit it. But no, I think it really can help you if you're willing to view races from a different way and incorporate that into your handicapping in the future. It could be helpful.
Yeah, like I say, you can reverse engineer, because now you know what the horse won. And so you can go back and what did I miss? And then maybe next time you pick it up. Are you a contest player at all?
No, I never really have gotten into it. You know, I'm sort of more playing the long game with the parimutuel wagering. But, yeah, no, I never really got into the contest.
Very good. All right, Dave, appreciate the visit this morning and some thoughts for this afternoon. Again, on behalf of the public, because I hear the comments all the time, too. You're doing a great job with the morning line with the Naira racetracks. I mean, and particularly up here in Saratoga with the two-year-old races, it's tough. And there's some races where you've nailed it in a race where I thought, for me, if I was making the morning line with a bunch of first-time starters, I would be totally out in left field, and you nail it. And so I think a lot of that probably is due to the research. But again, as I say, on behalf of the fans, I'll offer congratulations on doing a great job.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
And I appreciate you stopping by this morning, giving some thoughts for this afternoon. Enjoy the rest of your stay up here at Saratoga and then on the return as well. And we'll talk again.
Thanks. Always enjoy chatting.
All right. David Aragona. We will wrap up Racing Across America for this Saturday morning. Big day ahead. Nice day. Sun's out. A little humid, but it has been right along. So keep that in mind. Don't forget Jockey PDF Awareness Day. 11:30 to 12:30, it's the autograph session out by the Jockey Silks room. Keep that in mind. You can buy the Jockey trading cards as well. So that's all a lot of fun and goes to a great cause. So keep that in mind for today. Enjoy the racing the rest of the day. Tomorrow, 9 a.m. handicapper support. 10 a.m., my partner Steve Bick, back from Haskell Week last week. So he'll be in for Loose on the Lead tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. So have an enjoyable Saturday afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow. 9 a.m. handicapper support, 10 a.m. Loose on the Lead.
You've been watching Racing Across America. Racing Across America has been brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. And the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. When you can't make it to the track, make it to the Clubhouse Racebook.